Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Time to labrish. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Backyard. This is your host, Margaret Marshall, and I want to welcome you this evening as we gather in the backyard to take a virtual trip to Jamaica, land we love. So if you'll bear with me, what I like to ask you to do is to just close your eyes and pretend that you are in your favorite chair on the island, relaxing, whether you used to do it on top of a roof, on the beach in a hammock, under the mango tree or the guava tree or whatever tree. Just take a couple of minutes to visualize how relaxed, and remember how relaxed it used to be, and just get back in that mood. So I want to welcome the callers on the board calling in and to ask you to, whatever the challenges were of the day or of the week, just forget about it, man, and let's just relax and chill Jamaican style as we labrish this evening. So I want to welcome everyone listening online as well as calling in. And to remind the listeners listening online that if you want to interact, because that's what a labrish is all about, interacting, you'll have to call me at 1-718-766-4558. And I'd also like to remind you that we're here each Wednesday. And for the call, for the visitors coming by later on after the show is closed, you can always listen to any of the archive shows that you find at when you're on the Blog Talk website. So without any further ado, I want to welcome everybody and to hope that you have your favorite drink in your hand, whatever it would be if you were on the island. And if you are just a visitor to the island, any of the listeners, then you know what your favorite drink was. And I hope it was something local, like I can't even remember the names of the local drinks, but I know for sure that everybody in Jamaica like their rum and Coca-Cola. So whatever, let's hope that it got you in a relaxed mood, because this evening we are going to be talking about two very important women who left their mark on the world. And we've been having a marvelous time with our seniors going back to their school days, and the shows have been very popular. And most of the participants have really shared with me how it took them back to a very joyous place because they had to prepare for the show. So I hope that our listeners had just a rich as experience as I did, and our guests who shared their memories with us. So this evening, and incidentally, I want to thank most of my fans and my girlfriends, because I get my material from the information that people send me. And it was one of my very dear old girlfriends, or old, not in terms of age. She's a little older than me, but because we've been girlfriends for so long, a very, very long time, and she really sent me the information. She lives in Canada, and she sent me the information about, if you're on my list, you know we're going to talk about Rosemary Brown this evening and also Dr. Cecilia Williams, that really, they've both passed away, and I'm sure perhaps there are some of their descendants that are still around and maybe come by later to listen on the show, or maybe listening on the show now. I never know who's listening. However, I am going to start off with Dr. Cecilia Williams, and I did talk about her before because Dr. Joy Lumsden, who is a historian that has contributed a lot to my knowledge about things that happened in Jamaica, she had featured some information on Dr. Williams, which I did on a show for, I think it was History Month, one perhaps the last year or the year before. However, Dr. Lumsden, apparently in Jamaica, Black History Month, or History Month for them, is February, and it coincides with the Black History Month here in the United States. So I talked about Dr. Cecilia Williams a little bit before, so if it's repetitive, please forgive me, but I am actually reading from Dr. Rebecca Tortella's version in Pieces of the Past. And for the listeners who are online, you know, Pieces of the Past have some very wonderful articles that were prepared and published. It's now published in a book that's available on Amazon, which is called Pieces Jamaica, Pieces of the Past, and it's all penned by Dr. Rebecca Tortello. So I am going to be starting by telling you what Dr. Tortella said in her article that is on Pieces of the Past. One day in 1902, landowner Roland Williams is said to have looked at his active 9-year-old daughter, Cecilia, and declared, "You'll never find a husband, my dear. You had better go to Oxford when you are old enough and learn to be a lady doctor." He could never have known how prophetic that those words would be, because he was Cecilia, born at Kew Park, Darlington, in Westmoreland, grew up to become a pioneer in her chosen field of pediatrics. Dr. Williams was directly responsible for initiating a worldwide campaign against the use of unsuitable sweetened condensed milk as a substitute for breast milk, and for the diagnosis of the dreaded childhood nutritional disease, Karawashko. And I will spell it for the medical people. I may not be pronouncing it right, but it's spelled Kwashiorkor. So that was diagnosed by the doctor and actually cured. So let me go on with the, I want to do my little sidebar here and invite the listeners on the board. If you want to interact with me as I go through this Dr. Tortella's article, feel free to do so by hitting 1 on your telephone, which will show me on my little magic computer that you're raising your hands as if you were in school. And remember now, this is a lab, so we're very relaxed, and it's, you know, it's sort of casual as we learn about these fabulous women of the past. I like to feel that when we come to the backyard on a Wednesday, we're here to visit with each other and chill, and, you know, just like we were in Jamaica, no problem on. This is our hour to just relax and learn something. Tonight, we're in that learning mode. Sometimes we are leaving our own memories. Tonight we're learning about these two fabulous women of the past. So feel free to hit one on your phone because I'm putting in my sidebar every time I can. Now, if you're on my list, you know that she was born, I think, in 1893. And you're going to see how this woman connects with the other woman and some of her statements later on when we get to Rosemary Brown. But in her father was a doctor. And at 9 years old, he was predicting that she was not going to find a husband because in those days, that's what young ladies did. And their parents, I suppose, helped them to find husbands. But, I mean, we women nowadays that have so much freedom. And in Jamaica, I know when I came here in 1959, I could not understand what the women's lib movement was all about because I grew up around liberated women. But anyway, let me get back here. Now, her father's daughter is the next caption on Dr. Tortella's article. It wasn't until the outbreak of World War I in 1914 when she started to take first aid and nursing classes that Cecilia thought seriously about studying medicine. In 1916, her father died. And she decided to follow his advice and go to Oxford, her father's alma mater. She was one of few females admitted due to the scarcity of male students caused by World War I. Now, I'm gathering by that statement that perhaps initially they didn't take women or women just didn't apply because a woman was supposed to get a husband. So no women were becoming doctors. But because of the war and the men were gone off to war, then they accepted her in the class in Oxford. Interesting. And back to the article. After graduating in 1923, Cecilia worked extra long hours at the South London Hospital for Women and Children in one of the first child welfare clinics. She chose to specialize in pediatrics, and her conviction that cultivating knowledge about her patients' personal backgrounds was crucial to successful diagnosis and treatments would come to define her medical practice. So talking about passion, you could see that early in her career, she had a passion. She had direction. She knew exactly what she wanted to focus on, and she had a passion about it. And I always use stories from the past to try to help the young folks, if they should ever come by and listen to the show, to really understand that although a lot of things have changed, certain things remain the same because it's the people of the past who had passion about what they were doing, passion and determination that really caused them to succeed. We're talking about the age where women were not really given a lot of exposure or credit or even education. So back to the article, the young doctor in Africa is the next caption. A tall, slender, energetic young woman with a tireless commitment to healing, Cecilia at heart desired an overseas posting and applied to the colonial office. After waiting 2 years, she was sent to the Gold Coast, the area now known as Ghana, in 1929. Dr. Williams spent 7 years there learning to speak the language and working to improve health conditions. When she arrived, one room served as a waiting, consulting, examination, sterilization, and dispensing room. She established proper clinics and hospitals and was also responsible for issuing patient information cards to improve record keeping. Cecilia also started Well Baby clinics that stressed nutrition, run by nurses she trained to do outreach on maternal and child care. As a result of the success of these Well Baby clinics, attendance at her hospital fell dramatically. Think of how interesting that is. Because she was so passionate about the outreach program and teaching people to take care of the patients and educate them, they didn't have as many sick people in the hospital. Cool. I am so thrilled when I read up all these details. And I hope that our listeners are enjoying it just as much as I am. And I want to, again, take a minute to welcome everyone on the board and those listening online and to remind you that you are listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. And we're here each week at 8 o'clock on a Wednesday where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And tonight, we're talking about two women of the past, not so long ago, however, but that really made an impression on the whole entire world, on the planet. So we're going back to Dr. Tortella's article. Dr. Williams' most important work in Africa was her diagnosis of the common and often fatal disease that I spoke about before. A disease too long misdiagnosed as a vitamin deficiency, which is a lack of niacin. Soon after her arrival in Africa, she began to keep track of children who came to see her with swollen bellies and legs and whose skin were sometimes of a lighter color than that of their parents. She, after receiving the equipment needed to carry out postmortems, she needed to get permission from mothers to perform postmortems on their children, an act which was believed to be against their religious beliefs. Cecilia carried out a few at great personal risk while conducting postmortems because in the 1930s, while there, she had no antibiotics. Dr. Williams wound up becoming infected with the disease known as hypophthalmic. I can't pronounce it, but it's a streptococcus type of disease after doing a postmortem with a small cut on her hand. It nearly cost her life. Never want to look on the negative side. During her recovery, a friend visited her only to find her writing a paper on the disease, noting her findings, which as the facts, the most children were found to have a fatty liver. Once back at work, Cecilia began to question the women more about what they feed their children. Frustrated at her inability to solve the puzzle of this disease, unwilling to watch more children die from it. She asked an African nurse if it had a name. Apparently, at first, she didn't know what the name was. So she asked an African nurse if the disease had a name. She learned it was called K-W-A-S-H-I-O-R-K-O-R, meaning the sickness that older children get when the next baby is born. Cecilia surmised that this meant that weaning children were not receiving enough to eat. The cure for the disease was a simple one of educating the parents about the children's nutritional needs. She quickly published her diagnosis in one of the many articles on maternal and child care in third world countries she would publish during the course of her lifetime. So here's my sidebar. Not only was she trained as a doctor, but this woman was thinking on her feet by asking the right questions of the people who spoke the language and the people who understood the culture. She could determine that the older children were getting it when the younger children were born. So, and I suppose the babies were coming fast. They were not promoting birth control in those days. So the children that were weaned were not getting enough to eat. I suppose that's how the condensed milk thing comes in, but we'll perhaps discover that later. However, I thought that was just so smart and ingenious because she was thinking on her feet. And although she was not a mother, it stated no place in this documentation that she was ever married and had a child. But she really was concerned about those children and, of course, the whole nation that she was tending at the time. So here again, remember, folks, if you want to join the library and put in your 2 cents on this article, feel free to do so by hitting 1 on your telephone, and I'll know that you want to join the library. So let's get back to the article, because I don't have a chance to read this, all the details of this, before I decide who I'm going to read about. So sometimes I'm fumbling, but do bear with me because I get excited, number one. And number two, my sight is not all that good. You remember now, folks, I'm a senior. So feel free to come in and so I can get a break sometimes. Anyway, let's get back to the article. I see everybody's enjoying it because you're still here. Okay, Dr. Williams was always eager to learn new medical techniques. When confronted with diseases she couldn't cure, she was not adverse to referring her patients to African herbal doctors. You remember now, we're talking about long ago. She became close to one such African doctor who, over the course of a few years, healed patients, listen to this, folks, suffering from tetanus and meningitis, diseases for which Europeans had no cures, but the African doctors was curing them. How cool is that? That's not in the notes. I'm talking about that. Okay, let me go back. European farm. Eventually, she met one of the doctors, and he shared his methods with Cecilia, and she took copious notes, hoping to engage European pharmaceutical companies in the manufacture of these cures. Sadly, Dr. Williams' notes were lost in the country of her next colonial office post, which is Malaya, during the occupation of Singapore in 1941. So in other words, during the war, she lost the papers. Here's my point. Those African doctors were curing all those real bad disease with herbs, apparently. They didn't have any medication. Pharmaceutical companies were not there. But even way back then, there were people interested in bringing some of those cures to Europe and to the rest of the world. And I just thought that was quite interesting because, you know, we know that Jamaicans have been all over the world from way back when. And a lot of times these articles bring out the details that might not be posted in an article about them, you know, if they get an award or they're celebrating something about them. But I think it's just marvelous because you can connect the dots and know that it's the passion and drive that not only these women, but everybody in whatever their discipline is, whether it's sports or medicine or the arts, but it's the passion and the drive that really sustains the journey and the breakthrough for everyone. And we can take that and pass on all of these messages to the younger generation. Because, you know, as seniors, we really can't give up on them. We really have to. But there's so much rich, there's such rich messages in a lot of these details that I really am very, very passionate about bringing that out when I read the articles. So I'm going to go back to the article now, unless somebody wants to try chime in on the board. But now she is in Singapore. It's now called Singapore. In the late 1930s, Dr. Williams arrived in this Asian country, now part of Malaysia, to lecture at the University of Singapore. She began to pay attention to milk and what types of milk were used to feed children. She discovered that milk firms were encouraging women to use sweetened condensed milk instead of breast milk by saying it was healthier for their babies, which in fact is the opposite of the truth. She immediately began her campaign against the milk firms by speaking in public, publishing her famous thesis about milk and murder. That's what was the title of her thesis. You can imagine how provocative that was in those days. I mean, they couldn't sue her like they did Oprah when she talked about the beef. But I thought that took a lot of nerve to do it, you know, in her time. So let me get back to the article. I'm getting so excited. So the title of her thesis was Milk and Murder, and Increasing Her Outreach Activity amongst local women. So this woman was a mover and shaker, World War II prisoner. In 1941, Cecilia was settling into a regular routine in the Malaysia. She was responsible for 23 other doctors and some 300,000 people. On December 8th, the Japanese invaded, and Cecilia's normal routine was shattered. Although she hated to leave her patients, as a European citizen, she was ordered to undertake the tedious journey by river over mountains to the still safe Singapore. Soon, Singapore too fell to the Japanese, and Cecilia was kept as a prisoner. She came down with a terrible case of dysentery, the inflammation of the lining of the large intestines, and nearly died. Not too long after she recovered, she was moved to another prison. The nights were filled with sounds of screaming prisoners living through their worst nightmares. After 2 years of near starvation at the prison, Cecilia was taken to the headquarters in Thai, the equivalent of the Nazi Gestapo. She was tortured, starved, questioned to exhaustion, and placed in series of cages, and was forced to share with dying men She was in the cages. She was forced to stay in the cages with dying men for over 4 months. Cecilia survived 11 days and was released and returned to Shanghai. VE Day in 1945, the day of the Allied victory over Nazi Germany, found Cecilia in the hospital near death. All Malayan friends collected her and nursed her back to health. Not long after, she was part of a guard of honor, all women who had been imprisoned by the Japanese, who witnessed the surrender of 6 Japanese generals to British war hero Lord Mountbatten. She then returned to England. Oh my gosh, when you think of what this poor woman went through, being caged up with dying men and starved and tortured. Oh my goodness gracious. Okay, in her golden years, as soon as she regained her health, Dr. Williams returned to Malaya and became the first woman to be put in charge of all maternity and child welfare services. She was 52 years old. She stayed for 3 years and returned to England to lecture at Oxford. From 1948 to 1951, she worked as an advisor to the World Health Organization, the first in maternal and child health in London. In early 1950, she worked for a while in her native Jamaica, leaving to become senior lecturer in nutrition at London University in 1953. In 1960, Dr. Williams went to Beirut as a professor of maternal and child care at the American University and stayed there for 4 years. At 70 years old, in 1964, she became an advisor in the training program of the Family Planning Association, a position she retained for 3 years. In her 90s, Dr. Williams remarried. Well, she did. I'm getting so excited, I'm not reading writing. She after 3 years, in her 90s, Dr. Williams remained an active speaker, giving talks in countries such as Nepal, Pakistan, and Israel. Isn't that a wonderful woman? Oh, my goodness. I hope to live as long as she does. In 1977, a worldwide boycott of sweetened condensed milk as infant food began. Despite the fact that formula is not equivalent to breast milk, scarce resources continued to be used to buy it while free, healthier breast milk is left to dry up. The papers of Dr. Cecilia Williams were given to England's Contemporary Medical Archive Center in 1993 and subsequently catalogued. They cover most aspects of our work from 1929 to 1989 in the field of child health care as a practitioner, teacher, and consultant in the developing worlds. The collection includes correspondence, reports, lectures, publications, photographs, and sound recordings, and is of relevance to a wide range of issues related to health, to child health care in developing countries. I think this is a wonderful contribution, as I say, not only to Jamaica and Africa where she was, but the entire world. And to think that at 9, her father in Jamaica, this woman was born in Westmoreland, which is the birthplace of my mother, and I think my grandfather, too. So, you know, I'm just so thrilled when I read all of these marvelous things. And being a woman myself, I am so proud of the women of the past who lived their passion, even in spite of persecution and in internment and torture. She survived and still went on to do great things. So I am just thrilled and pleased that I see a hand up from 718, and I'm going to open up the mic because I'm just beaming from and smiling from ear to ear. Welcome to the backyard. This is the excited.
This is Lynn, the Bronx.
Oh, hello, Lay of the Bronx, my loyal fan. How are you today?
Oh, pretty good. I'm not sure after this little talk whether people are so that were so dedicated to condensed milk will think twice.
No, I know why. Perhaps we were so hooked on condensed milk in Jamaica because the milk companies were pushing it. They were
Nestle's must have had real fits, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
But the whole point is that condensed milk was, and still is, a good refreshing drink. But it's no substitute for real milk because it's packed with sugar.
That's right. That is so right. And at that, in those days, apparently they were pushing it. They don't have to push it now because people are hooked on it.
Oh, yeah.
The
hope was to get nutriment for the feeding, the breastfeeding babies. That was her point.
Right. And now I think even some of the third world countries, it is thought to be more prestigious, I think, from that point of view, if the mothers can buy the milk for the children. You know, it's a head thing, an emotional thing. And if they're not properly educated to know that the breast milk is better, the children are not really getting the nutrients from it.
All right. And just for the record, her first name is Cicely, not Cecilia.
Oh, it's Cicely. Cicely. Yeah. Okay. Well, I stand corrected.
Yeah. So this woman was working in a time when their antibiotics hadn't come out yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And she fell subject to some of the African diseases that a lot of people visiting Africa come down with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So she must have had a good,
immune system.
Immune system. And I was trying to work in this idea that, like our friend Bolt, you know, he eats the right foods.
Oh, it must be the yam.
That could be.
Well, you know, she was born and raised in Jamaica. She never went to, if you look at the years, she was born in 1893. And she actually left for college after her father died, and he died in 1916.
Yeah.
She didn't say exactly when she went.
Right.
She graduated in 1923.
Yeah, but she also went to Wilma's, I think, right?
I don't know. These papers don't say that. But I know
yes.
She must have to go to get into Oxford. She must have graduated from one of the...
Ooh. I see her in my notes that she was from Darlaston, Westmoreland. I think my grandmother was from that area as well. But she was educated in Jamaica, partly at Wilma's Girls' School.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
So that is a tribute to the type of education that, as your series brought out before, was of very high quality.
Of course, yes, yes, yes. And it was not really popular for women to be well educated. A lot of women were not going to London and Canada in the old days. A lot.
Well, they went to high school. Let's put it that way. But a few of them would go on for higher education, as she did, because of her father's prompting, and of course it was his alma mater, Oxford University in England, that he suggested she would eventually go to.
Right, right. But, you know, in the old days, the ladies were expected to get married.
Of course. I don't even think that women had voting rights in England, even England at that time.
Mm-hmm. Rightly so.
You know, it was a big step.
Big step. But you know, looking at her picture, and if anyone is looking, listening online, I think I put a picture on the video there. But she looks quite frail. You know, you wouldn't know that she would have the tenacity and the endurance of all that she suffered, because, you know, she didn't have an easy life. Even the getaway, when she was at a place and she had to take off, it was a tedious trip.
Yeah, well, you know, any trips to Africa, for one reason or another, in those days, is not a bed of roses. I, for one, I had a friend who went over there, married an African, did some teaching over there, and had to return to the States because she picked up an incurable disease, and unfortunately she succumbed to the disease.
Mm-hmm.
So you never know what you're going to... In fact, in the news tonight, they were showing this high-tech guy from California who is working on diseases, and he went to Africa, and his point is that a lot of the things and the game and the foods that the Africans eat transmit all kinds of diseases from the animal to the people.
But is it affecting the people themselves, or are they immune to it?
Some cases they develop immunities to whatever, but most cases, I would say, they develop all kinds of... you know, if you eat an animal that has rabies, forget
it,
you know?
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
extend that to other diseases, and you find that Africans die young.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to... do you have any other comments on Dr.
No, I just think that this woman, she really did had a good life, and she excelled in every area. I think I read where she went to 58 different countries. She was a lecturer and on top of all the other things that she did, so.
Right. But to me, her survival skills was quite remarkable, I think. Quite remarkable.
Definitely.
We have another more recent Jamaican woman to talk about.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Really, really cool, because what I like about reading the story is that she wrote about herself, and I think that was just fantastic, you know what I mean? Instead of having other people write about her, she wrote about herself, and I did send for her book. I didn't get it yet, so I'm anxiously awaiting it so I can see how she, you know, what she said about herself. So let me just tell our listeners to that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here once a week on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. Tonight, we're discussing two Jamaican women who left their indelible stamp on the rest of the world. We just got off talking about Dr. Seeley Williams, and it is just remarkable all that she survived. And you can read about her in Pieces of the Past, which is a publication. It's also published online by Dr. Rebecca Tortello. So if you're a Googler, you can find information on that easy. But I know that a lot of people don't have time to read or don't like to read, so I call myself putting a voice to the documentation while we just sort of put it into a labrish format, because we're having sidebars and mispronunciations and all sorts of things. But we're learning and we're having fun and we're celebrating these women because, you know, Jamaicans have done so many and so things and so much for the rest of the world that, you know, just makes me very, very proud. And I hope that the rest of the listeners are getting as much thrills as I am. So, Mr. Lay from the Bronx, you ready for Miss Rosemary Brown?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there's going to be a stamp out next year.
Yes.
Of this wonderful woman. So, let me tell you what the article says that actually is by an Alan Hustak, H-U-S-T-A-K. And it's actually published in the Canadian Post, Montreal. Rosemary Brown, the first black woman elected to public office in Canada when she won a seat in the British Columbian legislature for the New Democratic Party in 1972, will be honored with a postage stamp on February 2nd. Brown was 72 when she died in 2003. She first encountered what she described as racism Canadian style. Polite, denied, and accepted. In 1950, when she arrived in Montreal from Jamaica as a 19-year-old to study at McGill University, Brown had been educated at private girls' schools in the Caribbean before attending McGill. Her experience in Canada was not what she expected. She couldn't find anyone at McGill to share accommodations in the students' residence because she was black. So Brown was given a room by herself. Despite the fact that that particular form of racial discrimination worked in my favor economically, it made me angry. And my anger was compounded by my frustration, she wrote in her 1989 autobiography, Being Brown, A Very Public Life. And that's the book I sent for. Back to the article. Brown refused to be pigeonholed because of her color. It was when I came to Canada, I heard people say for the first time, you're inferior because you're black. But it was too late because I came from anyone who was anyone was black. The governor was where I came from, I'm sorry. Where I came from, anyone who was anyone was black. The governor was black. The judges were black. And I knew I wasn't inferior to anyone. That is a quote from her. She credits Arthur Hugh MacLennan, her professor of Canadian literature, with teaching her to see Canada through new eyes. Partially because of him, she wrote, "The hatred faded and disappeared, but I never lost the rage at the injustice, stupidity, and blind cruelty of prejudice." Brown obtained her BA in 1955 and worked at the Montreal Children's Hospital before she and her husband moved to Vancouver in 1963. According to an antidote in her book, the Browns have remained in Montreal. If it hadn't been for a thoughtless white dentist who yelled at her for arriving with a toothache at his office just as he was preparing to leave. As she tells it, the dentist assumed she was a housemaid. Brown worked at Simon Fraser University, where she set up an omnibus service, worked with the Vancouver Children's Aid Society, and in 1972 was recruited by the NDP to be a candidate in the provincial election. She ran and won. The Brown commemorative stamp is one of two to be issued by Canada Post for Black History Month in February. The other honor is for Abraham Doris, and I don't have the rest of it, Shad, S-H-A-D-D, a conductor of the Underground Railway, which brought slaves into Canada during the 1980s. But and the article ends there. But I just thought this was very interesting because, as she said, what she said in other words is that she didn't know she was black till she got to Canada, because she was coming from a country where the color did not matter. Isn't that something? Because, you know, I felt the same way when I came here. I was just a person. Right, Leigh?
Right.
Are you there? But that is all I have on Rosemary Brown. But I did go, find something else, because she was quite, not only did she write a book, and I'm going to share with the listeners, once I get the book, you know, I'm going to share some information on it. They say it will take 5 to 14 days, because I just got this article about her being on a stamp. But I thought it was really cool, because I wish I had had more information as to, you know, where she went to school and all of that.
Well,
but I don't.
You said from what you read that she went to private schools, so maybe that's why they didn't comment that she went to Wilma's or Alpha or some other school like that.
Weren't all those schools private in those days?
Not in the sense.
Before, when did she go there? I think all of them were private. Weren't they considered private schools?
Well, no, not
really.
Not in the sense of private. You know.
Oh, I got you.
But
she arrived in there in 1950. That's when she got there.
Then she went. Yeah, she went to. She must have had good preparation to get into McGill, because
right,
McGill,
because it's a private girls' school in
high
the Caribbean,
in Canada, as opposed to the universities in the United States and UK.
Right,
McGill is tops. So I have that she served as a member of the Legislative Assembly in British Columbia from 1972 to 1986.
Wow.
And that making her the first Black Canadian woman to be elected to a Canadian provincial legislature.
Interesting.
So that's big time. That's almost like that woman that, as I'm talking about it now, she would be the equivalent of that woman that was a representative in Brooklyn.
Oh, yes. I know who you're talking. Yes, yes, yes. Took the first woman to Congress.
Yes.
You know,
correct.
she was married to a Jamaican.
Yeah.
She was an American woman, but she was married to a Jamaican at the time.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, Lee, you know her.
Yeah.
Personally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can't remember her name now. She passed.
Yeah, well, that is the senior moments that we all have.
Yes, yes.
In 1975,
most of our fans of seniors, I'm sure they can understand and bear with us.
Yeah.
But actually, I don't know about anybody else, but I thoroughly enjoyed all of that knowledge about these women who, you know, a lot, I'm sure that perhaps there are descendants of these people. It never said if Dr. Williams had any siblings. Nothing was mentioned about any brothers or sisters.
Maybe
because they might have, if there was, they might have other children.
Yeah, you get the impression she was like an only child or something like that.
Yeah, that's why perhaps her father thought that she would follow in his footsteps, and he was a doctor.
Yeah,
so,
and maybe he was sort of saying in a quiet way that she should stay home. She wouldn't have to stay home and take care of him.
Right.
I don't know.
She was pretty young. He died in 1913. Is that what I said? Whatever. And she was born. She was nine in what? But I mean, she was perhaps a teenager.
Yeah.
Pretty young. Yeah. And they don't give a lot of history. And that's why, you know, I encourage the seniors to write your own story for your family. Because, you know, it's hard to put pieces together, and we all believe that nobody cares and nobody's going to be interested. But just as we are interested now to talk about and find out about people of the past, you know, the young folks will get there one day where they have this urge to find out. And I encourage the seniors to use the wonderful technology that we have now that can put us in the cloud where we can never disappear, because I'm sure Mr. Google will always be around.
Yeah.
So
and this woman we're talking about, Rosemary Brown, apart from being the first Black woman to run for leadership of a Canadian federal party, she was the only the second woman who ran and came in a very high second with 41% of the votes when she ran. So,
right.
Yeah. So
a lot of Canadians voted for her.
Right. So I mean, she was pioneering our future as well, you know, as a woman.
Right. The article mentions that she was approached. In other words, she didn't go after it. It wasn't like she went out and had the drive to go become one. They approached her.
Yeah.
The party approached her, and apparently she accepted. So that's interesting, too.
So it's
just been, to me, this has been just marvelous information to learn about our country folks from the island.
she achieved quite a bit of recognition as well, because next to her name, she's got a whole pile of credentials, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes, she had quite a lot of honors.
There's an OC, an OBC, and finally an LLD. So she was up there. And I see that after she left politics, she became a professor at Simon Fraser University.
Mm, wonderful. And it said she had three children, so I'm sure that she has descendants.
I didn't see that.
Yes, on one of the articles, I can't seem to find it now. But I promise that when I get our book, I'll share excerpts of the book with the listeners.
Yeah.
Perhaps when we're doing another person of the past that have left their mark on the world.
Yeah.
But,
I think also notable is that when she received her LLD, or after she received the LLD, she was sworn to the Queen's Privy Council for Canada. Now, this is really a big time.
Wow.
As a member of the Canadian Security Intelligence Review Committee.
Mm,
you know,
well,
usually this kind of...
Have you never heard of this woman before? Have you heard of her before?
I don't remember hearing of her. I mean, her name is, you know, like a common name, so
right.
Stick out.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is that since they don't refer to her as being an immigrant Canadian, they keep referring to her as a Canadian now. So for somebody to get such a high post in intelligence is unusual,
mm-hmm.
because I know my own self, when I was in the Air Force, they had picked me for some intelligence work, and I pointed out to them that I was not born in the United States and I should not get this assignment, because the assignment was for me to go to Turkey.
Mm.
Those days it was a little bit sticky over there. We weren't even allowed to wear our uniforms.
Like undercover.
Undercover. So I said, no
mm-hmm.
way I was. I was up on my regulation, so I told them, and they looked it up, and they didn't give me the assignment, because it was true what I said. You're not supposed to get these type of assignments if you're not a native born. So the point I'm making for Professor Brown is that she was not a born Canadian, but yet she got this intelligence. She was on the Security Intelligence Review Committee and did a lot of intelligence work.
Well, that is as you say, unusual, and thanks for pointing that out to us. That's what I'm saying. When we go through the details of these women that have achieved, and most of the people that have achieved something, you know, the details are, it shows that, you know, once you get past whatever the barriers are, or
yeah.
the obstacles are, or what other people perceive, you know, if with will and drive, you
yeah.
can break through anything. Because even though initially she didn't make that slow her down, she didn't
right,
make that.
This is typical
that,
of a Jamaican, you
right,
know. They,
right. And a lot of times people, I don't say that it doesn't exist, and I don't say that it don't still exist. But if you keep hopping on that, then you don't see the opportunities to move forward and break through the barriers.
Exactly.
So, you know, these women did that. because even in the case of Dr. Williams, you know, you can imagine in those days doing a postmortem on an African, which they're superstitious about certain things and all of that. How difficult that must have been to get the permission to do it.
Yeah.
So the idea, what I'd like to leave the program with is the fact that, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And once the next generation get focused on what they really have a passion and drive to do, you can overcome any obstacles in the way, because people from the past have done it. Especially Jamaicans. They didn't make color or anything stop them from doing what they really wanted to do. So with that said, Mr. Lay, I noticed that we're not getting a lot of hands up on the board, although we have callers who have really sat with us in their evening easy chairs, and we're still under the tree or on top of the roof. And I'm hoping that the drink didn't put us to sleep, that we're wide awake and just enjoying our little whatever we had in our hand as we chilled, no problem, man, and took our virtual trip back to Jamaica, land we love. Although we might not be there now, or we might not even plan to go back there to retire, at least we can come once a week to the backyard and take a virtual trip and be there in our imagination, because isn't that what all of this cloud is all about? We can be anywhere at any time, and I just love it. So with that said, Mr. Lay, I want to really thank you for always being there to help me with the, you know, tidy up the backyard. And
right.
I hope,
my pleasure.
I hope that the listeners are really getting to like our relaxed attitude towards the labrish, because this is not CNN. We're not doing any politics or religion or anything that's
I tell you,
bad
I love it.
About Jamaica. We're
I
just
think
celebrating
we do a better
all
job.
The good
some of these CNNs, because they get news and they don't verify the news. What most of what we say, you know, it's written down and verifiable. So, you know, in a sense, we should at least I commend you for doing the background and a lot of this. It's not easy, and sometimes it can be quite tedious.
Right, right. And believe you me, I don't really prepare as much as I suppose if I had a staff or something like that, because I am most times I'm just winging it, but I'm having fun and I'm really learning a lot, you know, and I'm being very honest about my opinions on my sidebars, although I try to make them light and comical sometimes. I don't mean any disrespect. I am just putting a lighter touch on some of this information. And I do that even when people are telling their own stories. And sometimes I have to check myself because I tend to get carried away. But my guests have been really just so delightful and informative, and I'm asking the listeners on the board, if you know of someone that would like to share their story about, as long as it's a good story, about, I mean, when I say good, it's always good, but what I mean is we're not here to talk about what are happening or have happened, or bad things that happen sometimes always end up, you know, leading to some good. That's fine. Because, you know, sometimes you have to go through some muddy waters to get to the clear seas or the clear waters. So that's all right, too. But I just have such a good time each week when we get together. And I want to thank everybody for supporting me and hope that you will stick around and come back and tell your friends to check us out. And we're going to be going into a full-scale expansion next year, I promise. And everything will be more polished, and we'll have hopefully a lot more people in the backyard, and we'll have a lot more fun as we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve our culture. So, Mr. Lay, thank you as usual for being there.
You're welcome.
And thanks for your research and your comments, and thank all the listeners on the board and those listening online. And ask you to come back. Oh, next week we're going to have a very interesting guest. I've already spoken to him, and he's going to be a wonderful surprise because I didn't never even heard of him before. But I don't really know a lot about anything because I left Jamaica so long ago and just got involved in raising my children, and now I'm trying to leave some memories for my grandsons, who will be just touching a button, because right now, even the littlest one, when he was a baby, you would touch something and expect something to happen. So, you know, the next generation is just going to be all up there touching and listening. So wouldn't it be wonderful when they're hearing these stories from the people who live them, or from the people who, like us, who are talking about the people of the past who were just so important to the rest of the world, as they were to Jamaica. So, right. Mr. Lay, thank you for coming, and have a wonderful week. And I hope
you
do
the same, and I'll say good evening.
Ah, thank you. And
bye.
To the rest of the listeners, I will say, as I always do, to make it a great week. Good night.